Do you ever just sit back and think about how work has changed over the years? You know, not just the fact that we use technology now in all aspects of our work, right? Like, I'm sure people that used to work at a manufacturing plant that used to do things by hand, now you don't anymore. Say you used to be a file clerk and you used to file. Well, now most of the filing is done in the cloud, right? Or some form of technology. And so sometimes I just sit back and I think, wow, where's the future of work going? Or what is the future of work, right? Just sitting back thinking about the changes. I think about jobs that I've had in the past and how the way that we used to do it, we don't do it that way anymore. And it's quite interesting, actually, to when you think about it. And so, like, I always think about trying to stay ahead or think further down the line of where things are going. And it's kind of like a catch-22 type thing, because I'm really huge on staying in the present and doing things for the now, like right now, do them because you feel like it and it's something you aspire to do, or, you know, it's something you're really passionate about, so you do, right? But for the last, I don't know, maybe for about the last few weeks, maybe a month, I've been really, really thinking about the future of work. And so that being said, usually when I'm like really, really deep in research mode, because I'm like always researching all the time. I'm researching because I just like to do it. I love to learn and share what I learn. So what I'm sharing today with you is, I'm looking for my notes now. What I'm sharing to you today is a video that I watched by World Economic Forum. And their discussion was about the future of work. And it was like the host was a woman. I don't really remember what her name is. And there was like 5 to 7 gentlemen, and they were like VPs or CEOs of major companies all around the world. It wasn't just US, it was all around the world. And so it was fascinating to hear their discussion about their thoughts about the future of work. And some of the topics that they talked about, for example, was automation. How so many things are automated. You know, your routine everyday type things are automated. And more, thanks to technology, more and more of our things that are routine that you do the same way, the same time, all the time, they're realizing that technology can handle that. Technology can handle that, and you really don't need a human being to handle that, right? So you're finding more and more things automated. And so one of the gentlemen said, with a lot of your entry level type of work, or low skill type of work, is automated, right? And so his point that he was making about automation is that it also makes your wages less. So I thought that was quite interesting, how the way that I saw, my lesson that I learned from that is that all the type of work that's automated is going to be low cost. It may cost the company more in the front end to pay for the automation, but once the automation is paid, then that will drive wages to go down. So I thought that was quite interesting. So the question was asked about, well, what are some solutions? Like, what can you do? So there were there, some of the gentlemen were from other countries, and they were talking about some of the solutions that they did, what they've done to fill the skills gap. And one gentleman mentioned that the government has to get together with companies and work together and solving this problem. So one of the solutions was apprenticeship, to offer that companies offer apprenticeship. That way people can learn while they earn. You get what I'm saying? Like, so say for example, one of the positions may be, I'm not sure, just say one of the positions you do at one company, say you don't know how to do it. You don't have the knowledge or the skills to be able to do it. Well, you can still get the job. You would get hired based off of your initiative. You would get hired based off of if you would be a culture fit with the company. You would get hired because after interviewing you, this company or the hiring manager can tell that you have that grit, you have what it takes to learn. And so they'll hire you, and then it'll be an apprenticeship, meaning that you'll get paid to work, but say that job is like actually $50 an hour starting off, but because you don't have the skills and you need to be trained, you may only get $25 an hour. You know what I'm saying? Or maybe $30 an hour or something like that until you're fully trained and know how to do it. And I'm sure there's probably a process of checking your how you have progressed along the way, right? So maybe it'll be every 3 months or every 6 months or something like that. And then when you're up to par to their standard, then you'll get the regular pay and no longer be in the apprenticeship. You will be a employee. So that was another option. And then there was on-the-job training, which is similar to apprenticeship, where you get trained on the job. And that just made me think of when I was younger, on-the-job training was huge. I mean, that's when I got into the nursing program. That's what it was. I became a certified nursing assistant while I was working and going to school. So I was learning and earning at the same time. And so while you're on the floor working with, you know, if you think about a lot of the medical, in the medical field, when you're a student, you also have to do clinicals, right? Same thing with even hairstylists. They have to do so many hours of actually physically doing the work so you can physically learn, not just book learn, but physically learn, right? And it's like, let's put that together with work. Like, on any job, you can implement the same thing. You can do on-the-job training. And I thought, you know, that's, you can't get more simple than that, right? Like, that to me is an easy solution for a talent gap or a hiring shortage or something like that. I think that is an easy way to go about it. So someone else in the group in the video brought up that it's a gig economy, and it's been a gig economy for over the last eight years. I think they said, they quoted, I mean, I'm quoting them. I think they said it was about 8 years of the gig economy. And what they mean by the gig economy is that more and more people, unemployment rates are down, and unemployment is based off of how many people are getting unemployment insurance. Well, unemployment insurance is no longer being extended like it was for a very long period of time. Like, it was almost extended to 2 years. You would get unemployment if you got laid off from your employer. But now it's back down to, well, here in Georgia, I think unemployment is about 12 weeks now, instead of being the 22 or 24 or whatever it was before. Now it's like, I think it's like 12 weeks now of unemployment. So if you no longer are getting unemployment, then according to the stats for the unemployment rate, it looks like you returned back to work when actually you may not have returned back to work. You just don't have unemployment anymore, right? So there's a lot more people that don't have unemployment anymore, but that does not mean that they return to work. And so the gig economy is pretty much where people are getting part-time jobs or they're cutting grass, babysitting, washing cars, maybe cleaning office buildings, just asking, can I come in and clean and you just pay me for cleaning or something like that. That's the gig economy. Like Uber is a huge component of the gig economy because you get paid to drive people around. You are not an employee of Uber. You're just, you're self-employed, as they say, or independent contractor. And so you have to keep up with your taxes and all that kind of stuff. And so what this gentleman was trying to explain is that due to the gig economy, you have more and more people that are doing odds and end type of jobs or create a product and sell that product. The point that he was making is that a lot of people that do Uber, for example, we'll just use Uber for example, but a lot of people that drive Uber cars are not financially set. So it's not like it's enough money to be able to maybe pay your mortgage, pay your car insurance, pay cable and internet. Like pretty much what he was saying was that you can drive Uber or you can do some of these gig type jobs, but it's not enough money to survive off of. So I thought that was quite interesting that he was talking about that because that's not how it's perceived, right? Online or even in the news, sometimes they're constantly saying, you know, Uber's always hiring or, you know, look at all these Uber drivers, and they're showing you how people are doing Uber or Lyft or things like that. I can't think of some of the other names of some of these companies that are hiring people to do a service like delivering packages or delivering food. But what they're not showing is how these people, like how many hours a day are they spending and how much wear and tear it's on their vehicle, which they don't get paid for any of that. That's money that they have to put to the side to be able to pay for gas and pay for repairs and new tires and car insurance and things like that. That they're not, if you figure that in to how much you're making per mile, like 50 cents a mile or 80 cents a mile, I'm not quite sure, but I know the government, I think now in 2017, on your taxes, I think it's about 51 cents a mile. So if you figure that out to how many miles you're driving, but then deduct all the maintenance and things that you have to do with your car, it seems like you're really making under minimum wage. And you probably are doing it part-time. You're probably not going to do all that driving over 8 hours a day, but you never know. Some people may, right? So the point that he was making about the gig economy is that you have people that say work at retail stores, right? That work at retail stores, but they're only working 20 hours a week. That means they have to work somewhere else for 20 hours to try to equal up to a full-time job or a full-time pay. And so you're in the gig economy, what you're finding is instead of people becoming full-time employees, you're finding more people doing small project type jobs or having like 3 or 4 jobs to try to equal up to the full-time job that they used to get paid before. So that's the difference with the gig economy. And I thought that was quite interesting too. What else he said, someone else had mentioned that temporary staffing agencies have increased tremendously because a lot of people, statistically, they were saying a lot of people don't want to work full time. Most people, they were saying, mainly generation, I would say Generation X and millennials, they don't want to work full time. They want to spend their time with their family or with friends or doing volunteer work or doing something that they really want to do or enjoy doing it. And they don't want to spend the bulk of their work at work. I think also too, both generations have figured out that actually it doesn't take 8 hours to do the work that you do. So that's why they're saying staffing agencies are increasing, because people will go ahead, their statistics is saying that people will take on a temporary job and maybe only do that job for 3 months. Maybe work 40 hours for 3 months. Or maybe only work a weekend or 2 weeks straight, and the gig or that project is over with. So some people might work 6 months and decide, I don't want to work anymore. So that's why those are becoming popular, because people, they're saying statistically, more and more people don't want to work traditionally. They want more flexibility in their life. That was quite interesting. They say that they also call that shared jobs, that people want to do shared jobs. Which what I got from the shared jobs, meaning that Amy may come in and work at ABC company Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And then Jeff will come in and work Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday. And the company's closed on Sunday. That's like shared work. Like they know what their schedule is, and they prefer to have it that way, where they're not working every single day, eight hours a day. A lot of people, some statistically, they're saying most people don't want to work 5 days a week straight. Most people don't want to work 8 hours a day. You're getting more of this flex work, shared jobs availability, to where you don't have to work like that. Like I said, people are more interested in that flexibility. And I've even noticed that when I'm reading articles in the news about how more and more companies to recruit and retain employees, they're offering different type of perks. You know, perks that show more flexibility, to where you only have to work so many days a week, or you can make your own schedule as long as you get the work done. You know, you're finding more and more of that, because that's what people are willing to do. And some people are willing to do that even at a lower income. You know, some people are willing to take a couple of dollars off just to have that option, to have the flexibility. You know, it kind of outweighs it, right? And last but not least, one of the topics that they brought up is that they find that younger people, and I would also throw in there Generation X, are more interested in entrepreneurship. And I will definitely say I've noticed online that, you know, entrepreneurship is considered sexy. So you have more and more millennials thinking of, instead of traditional work, they're thinking more about entrepreneurship, which I think is it's pretty neat. I mean, it's pretty cool. I think ownership is important. I think everyone should have some form of ownership. You know, whether you're a writer or a singer or a designer or a videographer or something like that. But I think that's a great idea to have, to understand how it is to start something and to continue to run it. It may not be your full-time thing, but it could be a part-time thing. And I think that's really great. And I wonder too, also, is it that younger people think more about entrepreneurship because maybe they noticed their parents was in that time of the, that time where we went through the recession, like in 2007, 2008, maybe they saw their parents at that and they saw how they were on these jobs for over 20 something years and just got laid off and didn't quite recover the same. And so maybe that might have sparked something for the younger people to say, you know, I really don't want to have to depend on an employer. I don't want an employer to control my finances, you know. And maybe they sat back and saw that their parents have a degree and have this tremendous student loan debt. And that's why some of them are deciding not to go to college. It just makes you wonder sometimes when you talk to younger people, what are their mindset? Like, why is it entrepreneurship is so fancy and so sexy to them? Like, this is what they want to do, right? That might be why, because they've seen the shift. They've seen the change, that it's no longer like how when my parents was growing up, right? Well, I mean, not when I was growing up, and to see my parents, it was so like your companies seem so into their, like they valued their employees, like truly valued their employees. They would pay for training, send them out for training, give them great benefits like medical and vision and dental, and also the 401k, I think, wasn't out back then when my parents, but they had pension, right? So it was more perks, and the company made you feel like they really truly valued you. You know, it seemed like people back then, wherever you worked, it was like family. And I think that's quite interesting how we see the shift and how the change is going. And so I always think about, and I know I'm going to have more and more topics about the future of work. And I'm glad I saw this video, and it's really interesting to hear and see other people's perspective of what they think the future of work is and how to solve the shortage or the skills gap and things like that. So it was really, really interesting to watch that video.